So, Dr. Austin, I understand that you study clouds. What exactly is it that you're doing with clouds?
Well, my interest is really the connection between clouds and global warming. So as the planet heats up, the clouds are going to change. And turns out that they're a very powerful feedback, but we aren't quite sure about whether changing clouds will make the planet heat more rapidly or heat more slowly. So the key question that I'm interested in is called cloud feedback, which is how does global warming feedback onto changes in clouds, and then how do those changes create or dampen more global warming?
So how do you even track something like that?
Well, I mean, we've got satellites now that have been observing clouds pretty accurately for the last 25 years or so, and so we can see trends in cloud layers by just looking at the reflection of the sunlight. They're very bright and the oceans are dark. So trends, for example, the fact that clouds are decreasing in the Pacific Ocean have been apparent for the last 20 or 25 years. And then the big tool really is global climate models. So you put your best guess about how clouds behave in the real world into a climate model, and then you put in increasing carbon dioxide into the climate model and you see how the clouds respond to that.
Now, you've just finished up a project where WestGrid and Compute Canada have helped out, and I understand that it has to do with something called shallow clouds. First of all, what are shallow clouds?
Shallow clouds are clouds that only go up to about 3 kilometers in the atmosphere, and sometimes they rain, often they don't. But what they do always is pump water vapor and energy off of the surface where sunlight's absorbed and the ocean is evaporating into higher levels of the atmosphere. And so these shallow clouds actually are like a valve, and they control the moisture that's available to deeper clouds in the tropics. And it's the huge towers, these tropical cloud clusters that have tops at like 18 kilometers that actually drive the entire atmospheric circulation. So they've got a supporting role, but it's actually quite a crucial supporting role because their mixing activity is the feeder that supplies the energy to the huge tropical storms.
And have they been changing over time?
Well, I mean, that's the question. So the problem is that they're small. And so that means that in a climate model that has a grid cell, so you essentially split the planet up into a series of boxes. And right now, the smallest boxes that you can actually put into a computer, even a supercomputer, are about 100 kilometers on a side. These clouds have widths of maybe 1 kilometer, 500 meters. And so there's no way in a climate model to actually represent these individual clouds. And so you have to make assumptions about what the cloud statistics are. And again, it's just too soon to tell, really, for these small, shallow clouds what's going on. And so what we've been doing with WestGrid and with our own computing resources is using other models that model down to 25 meters so that you actually can model a field on 12 kilometers a side, and you run those computer models for days and then collect thousands and thousands of clouds. And so our work over the past couple of years has been to track individual clouds in those models and to actually analyze in detail exactly what they're doing.
And what have you found out?
We found out that really the largest clouds in the field are the drivers. So they really control how much mixing is going on, which means that you do need to accurately represent what's called the tail of the distribution, so these big clouds. The other question is nature versus nurture, which is are clouds big because they got a healthy start from a big plume coming off of the surface, or are clouds lucky? That is, do they actually have a history in which they didn't evaporate because they didn't mix in very much air? So nature is what the cloud originally started with, and nurture is what happens to it as it's trying to grow up in the atmosphere. And what we found is that it is a combination. So you've got extremely lucky clouds that live fortunate lives and they go on to become tall. And then you've also got gifted clouds that actually just start out big. And so understanding, you know, what makes a cloud lucky and what makes a cloud gifted are what we're going to be working on next.
What is the significance of this then? Does it help you with climate modeling?
So what we've been able to do recently is take a climate model and take a single column of the model, so one 100-kilometer square, put it in a part of the world in which these shallow clouds dominate, for example, the eastern Pacific, and then side by side run a much more detailed model that is given exactly the same conditions as the column of the climate model. And by looking at what the detailed model does, you've got a much better idea about how the climate model should behave. And so that actually has shown that we've got some significant problems with representing these clouds in the climate model, and they really do come down to resolution. That is, how can you actually model these tiny clouds when you've got such coarse resolution?
So any thoughts on how you might overcome this?
The feeling now is that the next step will be to go to what's called a stochastic or a random representation of the clouds. So rather than trying to explicitly model the clouds, you consider them to be random perturbations, and you guide the randomness. All you really want to capture is what are the probabilities that a certain cloud will exist, and then when you actually make a calculation, you just draw a random number that is consistent with those probabilities. And so you get what's more like bubbling, and that actually has shown promise, especially in the transition between shallow convection and deep convection. And so I think that's what most people are pointing to as the sort of the next step.
The work that you're doing, what are the implications for climate change and how we look at that and how we deal with it?
Right. So the climate models have been quite so disparate or distinctive in how much warming they think we're in for in the next 100 years or so, even when you give them the same amount of carbon dioxide. And over the last decade, it's turned out that clouds are the major culprit. That is, the reason the climate models are getting different answers is because they're making different guesses about how the clouds behave. And so what we're hoping is that by actually accurately representing the clouds, the climate model population will become a little bit in better agreement about what's going to happen over the next 75 years, because the most sensitive of the climate models are predicting that if we double CO2, we're going to get 4.5 degrees centigrade of warming. And the least sensitive models are more like 2.5 degrees. And that's a huge difference. That's the difference between 5 to 10 feet of sea level rising, for example. And so at the upper end, we would really actually be in quite an alarming situation. In the lower end, we've got a little bit more time. And that's really what's driving all of this research, is trying to figure out which end or in the middle the real world is actually, what trajectory the real world is actually on.
Thank you very much, Philip.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.